B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
In one of the most candid interviews I've done in recent memory, Donnie B is here to talk about his new music, new album, the battle of continuing life and making this record.
I was very depressed and, you know, and I was, you know, getting, I was cooked on things and stuff and very depressed. It's like to the point of wishing, you know, just wishing you weren't alive every day, you know.
Thoughts about sober writing and recording of music, what he loses creativity.
That was my main issue that I was getting therapy for, and in the classes, that's what I was discussing.
We discussed whether he ever rejoined Enough's Enough Again and how he continues to remain being sober.
I just want to keep it cool. I don't want to go crazy and put myself in that environment every single day on a bus with dudes and stuff. But, you know, I mean, take it seriously, and I feel better. I have a good circle of friends around me. I feel great.
His former bandmate, Chips Enough, joins me as well via text message and part of the conversation and a ton more. Donnie V today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
A big thank you, as always, for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. It is Meltdown here, and Al Beck is going to join me after our conversation with Donnie, talking about all sorts of rock news, including a Tool, a little teaser for there.
A little bit of teaser,
a little,
yeah.
A little teaser there. And also a band putting out a craft beer. Now, there's an original idea.
Yeah, well, some band was bound to think of it eventually.
Yeah, no one's ever done that before. Yeah. A couple bands contemplating cover albums, as well as new stuff from the guys from Slipknot. What is this song called? Solway Firth, is that it? Is that how you pronounce that?
Sure. Solway, maybe?
Yeah.
Solway.
Yeah, We Are Not Your Kind comes out on August 9th, so we'll give you a little taste of this song coming up later on as well. So, you have some good bourbon over the weekend or what?
Yeah, I had some, definitely had some. I'm feeling it today.
What'd you have?
Oh, I don't remember what it was. I was at my uncle's, and he just gave me, I was like, hey, you got any whiskey? He said, here you go. So,
oh, okay. You know. Yeah, I did a little bit of Jameson last night. I've been a little bit on the down low as far as the bourbon goes. Like, okay. I don't know why, just one of those things.
Yeah, I usually go scotch, so it was a little outside my normal realm, but it was good, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm not a big scotch guy. Who do you think you are, Ron Burgundy?
Damn right.
So
tell from the mustache.
Yeah, over the weekend, I asked my daughter, who was 18, and I said, hey, listen, do you want to go see this Yesterday's movie, or Yesterday, or whatever it's called? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a movie where, like, the guy starts playing Beatles songs and no one ever heard of it or something. You know, the world stops for like 12 seconds or something, and the Beatles are like erased from history or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
And we raced through traffic because there was an accident. Got there 15 minutes after the movie was supposed to start. So you're thinking, oh, good, there's 10 more minutes of trailers, right?
Right.
And they're sold out. So I sat through The Lion King.
Well, the things you'll do for a daughter.
That happens. Yeah, I saw that movie originally with a girlfriend back in the day. And now it's like this, I don't even know what they call it. But it's not the cartoon version anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually really well done.
Yeah, it was. I actually saw it too.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
You've seen that one? You still haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody? What a dick. What's wrong with you?
That's so many things. How much time do we have on this podcast?
Yeah, not much. Yeah. Hey, by the way, have you seen Rocket Man? I mean, that movie seemed to come out like to a thud. I haven't heard anyone talking about it.
No, I haven't seen that one either.
Yeah, all right. Well, that doesn't surprise me.
No.
That you haven't seen it.
Sure no.
So, well, Al's going to study his rock news, and we'll see if we can ask him anything about it, any follow-up questions after Donnie. But Donnie's got this new record out, which we'll talk about. Donnie also talks about, being fired from the band and his you know, substance abuse and different things like that. And I even got a little message in there from my friend Chips Enough to Donnie. So that and much, much more today with Donnie. Donnie V on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast.
Hello.
Hey, is this Donnie?
This is.
Hey, this is Meltdown from WRIF in Detroit. How's things, man?
Pretty good for my age.
That makes two of us.
How's things going with you?
Everything is okay, man. We're just cranking along here, man, getting through the summertime and stuff. And I called to talk about your record and everything you have going on in life. And it seems like things are starting to crank up for you, eh?
Seems like it might be. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to gear up a lot of hope or anything, because then you you have the possibility of being, you know, disappointed and you know, so it's all about just smelling the flowers along the way now for me. There's nothing too small, nothing too big. Just keeping the ego out of it. I'm just an artist. I'm not a rock star.
Were you a rock star at one point?
I was in a band with a bunch of rock stars. I'll tell you that. Whether I was a rock star or not, that's not something that you would call yourself. I imagine that I was.
Well, you traveled around the world playing rock and roll music for the fans, so I guess just by definition, you were a rock star. And you probably, for many, you still are.
Well, I did all the things that they say that rock stars do, and did much more of it, actually, you know. So I guess, you know, it's the chicks and the drugs and the partying and walking on stage and kicking ass. And I did all those things.
Yeah. I can't tell you the amount of rock stars I interview, of course, that went through their substance abuse problems and everything like that. You're clean and sober now, right?
I am.
Yeah.
Going on like 5 years.
What was the trigger point there?
Well, my pancreas, this year, earlier this year or the end of last year, my pancreas liquefied on me. I was sick. I was very sick during making this record, and my stomach was all tore up. So I started drinking a little bit, and I can't ever do anything a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, it started getting out of control. And before you know it, I didn't know what the reason I was sick was. My pancreas was bad. And then it went, when I started drinking, it just went to hell. And it was just one day, you know, it went just, they called an ambulance. And I spent a month in that hospital.
Wow.
You know, because they couldn't get the tubes down through me to feed me. And, you know, I had the doctor come in and do that moment where he tells you, you know, you should get your affairs in order and, you know, start thinking about saying goodbye. I'm like, fuck that. You know, like, come on, get out. I'm a tank. And I didn't feel like I was going to die. And my energy and my spirit completely didn't. I knew I wasn't, you know.
Right.
Now I'm all better. I'm all better.
So have you seen that doctor since?
No.
Should send him a Christmas card or something.
I didn't see him anymore after that. When I told him, get the fuck out of here, I never want to see you again.
Really?
Come back and you're Dr. Death.
Yeah, Dr. Death.
Grim Reaper.
So I guess that this record, well, first of all, this record was supposed to come out around that time, right?
It was, but we did. It was a Pledge Music campaign that we did, and Pledge Music just took everybody's money and ran and shut down. So it shut down a lot of stuff. We didn't get the money that the fans had. You know, that's what happens is the fans pay in advance for the record so you can make the record. Well, we made the record and then couldn't pay anybody because they, including ourselves, pay ourselves back because they didn't give us any of the money. They just took off with it and they fucked everybody.
Right.
We did right by them, but it took us some time to get that together and make sure that each one of those bands got what they paid for. And so that cost us a lot more money.
Yeah, I know my friend Damon Johnson's in the same boat there. They just did a benefit for him, for his record and stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, next time I think I can go. I got all the, you know, we can have all the names and the emails and stuff now because it's all on us. And so we'll go direct. If there is a next time, God willing, we'll go direct.
Yeah, I got you.
Right through them and get the pledges right there, you know. They take some and they don't give you the money until you're finished and you've done every obligation. I don't know how they expect that to work, but then to screw everybody. So that, you know, it took time then. So everything, you know, our plans and stuff kind of fell apart. You know, we had just started getting, you know, we had a manager and we just started doing PR and stuff. And then we had to pull him back and wait because this record is too important to me. It's you know, I haven't done one in a long time, and for it to be a total flop and fizzle, you know what I mean. So we had to wait until we can get it set up right and stuff to really release it. And so that's why I signed with Decca Records, you know, because they offered a pretty reasonable deal, you know, these days, you know, these times, you know, everything is different and everything is much smaller. As you know, if you're not the flavor of the week, which is impossible for me to be, I'm an old man now, but I'm still doing better shit than I did last time. That was my policy. And, And if I ever felt that I wasn't and I was heading in the other direction, then I would stop putting them out.
Yeah, I listened to the record last night, and I got to tell you, I've always thought that your sound was always pretty unique, and it was always very Beatlesque, and this record is the same way.
Yeah, well, obviously that was maybe my first influence in. Yeah, I learned a lot from it. I studied the Beatles. I studied how they, their voices, the different things they did, the, you know, everything about them, and so I had that's pretty good base and good foundation to start with.
For sure.
When you got that, you know how to, all those tricks, and my voice just ended up sounding, you know, somewhat similar, but if you A and B M, it doesn't. But, you know, then came Led Zeppelin and the Stones and AC/DC and, you know, the cool bands. I liked the classic bands, Pink Floyd, shit like that, not little, you know, one-hit things, or most of the stuff today I've never heard, so I can't judge that. But, you know, I just started putting this different piece. Motown, I was a huge fan of Motown. I loved that. And so there's a lot of influence in that, in my voice and in the writing. And, you know, I'm just getting better. I'm learning some production stuff. I'm doing all my demos on my own now without an engineer. And they sound really good. I just wrote 27 new songs for the record.
Jeez. You're really piling it on, eh?
They're just coming to me. They shut off for 4 years. I took a 4-year hiatus for self-improvement, and plus I went to, got in the middle of some dirty business. I had a warrant, and I got held by hillbillies without ransom for, you know, nearly, well, 6 months in jail and then 15 months in this program. And I was already clean by the time this happened. So that recovery thing was nothing for me, but it did a lot for me. It was getting the time to get healthy and getting the time to rethink things, and it was, and I got therapy, and I got my, you know, my hepatitis C cured, got my teeth fixed. You know, I cost them. They were trying to get me for money. I cost them $500,000 having me in there. Like, hey man, you don't know about me.
It sounds like it's a rebirth of Donnie V here with you know, the new music and the new you, man.
It is, because, you know, I kind of didn't really have any intentions of doing this anymore, or I questioned it. It's like my spirit was gone out of my body. I was walking around just a carcass, you know, and you still had a brain so you can realize it. And so I was very depressed and, you know, and hooked. I was, you know, I was hooked on things and stuff and very depressed. It's like to the point of wishing, you know, just wishing you weren't alive every day, you know. And just, unfortunately, my uncle just killed himself this week.
Jeez.
But, so the family's in turmoil. But like I was going to say, yeah, I hadn't thought of any ideas for 4 years. None of them came to me. And I was like, this has never happened to me before. I guess it's over, you know, because my ideas come from somewhere else. But the higher energy or something, they beam the little hook or something in my head. My job is to just follow the song and let it take me where it wants to go. You know, fill in the blanks and just don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
But I never have. I've always delivered for shows, for writing songs, for making the records, for singing. I've always delivered. So all the other stuff was none of their business.
Now, I was just talking with Brent Smith from Shinedown just a few days ago, and he told me that this record that he just made in 2017 was the first one he made sober out of the 6 they've put out. And he felt like that maybe he wasn't going to be as creative if he was sober. Did you ever get that vibe?
I did. That was my main issue that I was getting therapy for, and in the classes, that's what I would discuss. Because I always credited a lot of those songs, they're very empathetic, and they're kind of singing out of advice that I was singing to me, you know, because I have all these worries and all these troubles and substance abuse, and I'm so sad. But there's so many out there that are the same way, and so it really related to them and got them through stuff, and it got me through stuff, you know, and the fans get me through, and I get them through, so it's a great relationship. But, it's a total renewed life, and, you know, all of a sudden, just when I was questioning that, the first song, I Could Save the World, popped into my head. Mm. I demoed that and thought, well, there's a song. Then came another one off the record, and I demoed that, and it was a really good song. And then Then came another one. I was like, all right, I guess we're back in business.
That's
so made the record. It's a record I always wanted to make.
What do you think? I mean, this is obviously a hypothetical, but what do you think John Lennon would think of your cover?
Of Instant Karma?
Yeah.
Probably think I'm just one of those, a Ruddle, just an vocal imitator or whatever, just covering his tune. Hmm. Hopefully he wouldn't, but, you know, it's like when people say, oh, it sounds like John Lennon, but it doesn't if you listen to the back-to-back, you know. I just heavily influenced and loved the song, you know, so I sang it with everything I've got. And there's a video for it, too.
I was just listening to Double Fantasy the other day on my turntable at home, and like that record is so good if you take away everything Yoko Ono did.
Yeah, well, I heard a good story about that. Jack Douglas was producing that, and John and Jack were sitting in the control room, you know, and Yoko's in there and he's singing and stuff, and the story that he told was that Yoko's in there, just howling like an air raid siren.
Yeah.
And Jack Douglas were laughing their balls off in the studio, and so Yoko had him fired, you know, and all. See, Trick originally played originally played all the music on that record, and he loved it, but it's heavier. And Yoko, 86, went for the lighter sound.
Yeah, that's a good record without Yoko's stuff, that's for sure. But, hey, the 30th anniversary of the debut record is coming up in August. Tell me your thoughts on that. Yeah.
My thoughts on that is you just made me feel really old. No, I didn't even know that. It should be November. November of 89 is when it actually came out.
All right, it said August on the Wikipedia, but you know how that stuff goes.
No, I remember that thinking we had 1 month in the 80s, and we got branded in the 80s band.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, too. It's like I started my career right about that time in September of 1989. I got in radio business. And yeah, there was quite a change in the first 5 years of that decade of the 90s.
Your radio business was probably a lot of fun back then. We had a lot of fun on the radio and with the DJs and stuff on and off the air. You know, we had relationships. We come back to town. We go straight there without even getting called and go right on. You know, we hung with these guys. We're our friends.
Well,
they were able to play good music. They still weren't able to play what they wanted anymore. That was out the window. But, you know, they still played rock bands and things and had you on.
Yeah, well, speaking of our relationship, Chip is a friend of mine. And I texted him and I said, hey, I'm talking to Donnie. And he says, tell him, he said, ask him about his favorite tour. What it was like playing Donington Download Festival in England with Aerosmith / Billy Idol, Megadeth, Lamb of God, STP, etc.
That was pretty great. It's not the biggest one we've played, but it was great, you know, being on the bill with all those guys. We had a good show, a lot of people. It was fun to go there. We love England, you know, and you had to play with all those artists. I don't know if we didn't rub elbows with a lot of the bigger ones, you know, but we know a lot of those guys. They just would, their management, we keep their artists away from us.
you guys are the bad influence on that bill.
Not so much at that point anymore, but we were on tours that we've been on, you know, guys who were getting it together and trying to get clean, this and that would wander onto our bus, you know, like the Poison tour and stuff like that, because our bus was cool. It was not a great bus like most of those bands had. We had more hits. But I'd go immediately to the thrift store and get a bunch of fabric and cool, like, fucking shit hanging all over and candles and incense and beads. And it was really cool inside. A great vibe. We're in there partying our balls off. But usually they would, one tour, our bus wasn't allowed backstage, back behind the fence anymore. By 30 minutes after we're playing, it has to be out by then. And then that turned into, it's got to be at the end of the parking lot. It can't be parked right here. And then that turned into the next parking lot across the street from that one. We're like, what the hell? What the fuck are you guys doing? We'll still get in. It's just a longer walk. This is where the chicks are.
That's right.
This is where everything's happening. We want to go get hailed by fans. We just kicked ass.
Chip ended his text by telling me, tell him I love him and good luck with his new record.
Him too. Yeah. I love him too. And I've made peace, you know, I've had a lot of issues with a lot of things that he's done to me, But, you know, he also had to play in a band with me and had the frustration of my issues. But, you know, the things that I'm upset about, I heard a couple of interviews that I did when I was being negative, and they sounded like a whiny bitch, and I don't want to come off that way. And so we had it out one day, and then that was it. After that, I said, but, you know, every great thing I've ever done in my life, I've done with you. You did fast track me and took me under your wing, you know, when I was totally amateur, and turned me into a pro real fast. And we, you know, we've been brothers. So for the most part, I said to myself, am I mad at him more than I love him? And the answer to that question was no, of course not. I love him. So we've been friends again and talking, and, you know, he's been very supportive. He's always said good things. It would not be in his best interest to say bad things about me, you know, but I wasn't saying the best things, but I wasn't in the business for like 4 years or so since he fired me. I got fired. How do you fire me?
Well, look, looking back, it sounds like maybe you deserved it, according to your own words.
Oh, of course I deserved it.
Yeah.
I deserve to be fired, but I'm the guy who writes and sings all the songs. How do you fire that guy? You know? I fired them. And the way I looked at it, I fired them.
Is there, I mean, it sounds to me like there, like maybe in the future there's a chance that, you know, and I know you've probably answered this a billion times, but I mean, is there a chance that you guys could, you know, end up going back on tour together, playing music again?
I don't know about tours. I don't think that I'll even go on a tour anymore unless it was completely, you know, there's no way you could turn it down, but those aren't healthy for me. And you got to fill in those big dates with shitty little dates for very little money and very few people. And those are disheartening for me, you know, and those are the ones where I get frustrated and kind of, you know, a little bit humiliated, and then, you know, then you can pop over and grab a beer. You always got access to all that stuff, and then it starts, and, you know, you're one party away from being right back to your old ways. And so I'm just trying to be smart about that. As far as enough's enough goes, that's a bridge that I would cross if I had to and it was worth crossing, you know. That's all I say about that. And unless it was, you know, something that you can't turn down, you know, I think I've been there and done that for plenty of years.
Yeah.
Done everything I can there. And now what I'm doing now, I think, is more of what I believe in. And I think it came off very well.
So what you're saying is you would probably turn down the tour just to remain healthy like you are now. I mean, that's pretty much that. The bottom line is that you don't know if you could live that lifestyle again.
I know that I couldn't. It almost killed me last year, you know, and plus, you get alienated and you're all alone, you know, cause nobody can deal with your shit, you know, and it's just a ugly, ugly world. And I always knew it was, even when I was living through it, because I had manic depressive, bipolar, and, you know, functional autism and some other things, ADHD. So I was pretty fucked. And I didn't know all these things during my life, plus a abusive childhood. So I had a bunch of issues, you know, and I didn't know all of that. I learned that in the program and went through a bunch of things. And, you know, I got caught up. I was 18 and I got caught up into the enough's enough thing. And it just started, you know, started going out of control, even from Chicago when we were a local band and stuff. And, you know, we were huge stars already in town. Mm. And, you know, you get caught up in that. And you know, I was a scared, insecure kid. And I said, all of a sudden I'm on the center stage, you know, in the microphone. And you have to get over that shit. So it took some substances and stuff for me, you know, because I would take something and I could do it. But then the substances took over. And I could never understand it. I couldn't understand why I was doing that to myself. And, you know, my family, it would hurt them. And, you know, I figured the only one I'm hurting is myself. And I delivered every time. You know, I was doing my job really well. And so, you know, what are you going to do? It's the past, and you learn from it. And you, wherever you're supposed to be is you're supposed to be. So everything happens, you know. Hindsight is insight.
Mm-hmm. So with this new record and stuff, you don't plan on touring or playing any shows? Just put a record out and
I plan on, you know, I figure be kind of weekend warrior type things. If you get booked one somewhere, that you try to get another one close by that, you know, and if you're doing one, that means you're you're successful enough or, you know, or going to do enough business to do another one. They look at that and say, all right, we'll take you, you know? And so and they all got to be for a certain amount of money. It can't be out like, you know, enough's enough. We play shows for $500 for the whole thing, you know, in Bellevue, South Dakota or some, you know, some little shitty town that, you know, it's a tiny little place. And we're trying to fill in a day to pay for the bus gas stuff. And it was ridiculous. I come home from those tours and I owe money.
Right.
Chip would tell me, now, he wouldn't be hand. Not only is he not handing me money, sometimes it'd be $100, but he said, well, actually you owe like about $1,500. I'd give you money every single night. And he went and spent on drugs and this and that and said, well, you know, I'm a singer. Wrote the tune, said, I still want something to forget about all that.
Right.
You know, that's his party. And so that's, you ate steak dinner, you ate three meals a day in the hotel, the restaurant. Shit. I said, no, don't give me that shit. You know? And so, you know, it just, you grow apart. It's desperation brings desperate things and desperate acts. And some are more desperate than others. And, you know, so you can't, when things are good, that's the true test of character. So when things are great, it's easy to be great, you know?
Right.
But if things, when the things are down and the chips are down and you're really at your lowest of who you are at that point, is that's your character.
Yeah, that is correct. And, you know, it's like, it's funny because I have a lot of friends who have gone through like what you've gone through, and they tour differently now. They make sure that their time is filled with things to do, and some of them will actually leave the venue right after they get off the stage or something like that. You know, there's always that thing where they have to watch themselves all the time.
Right. So they can't have any fun. Well, I don't like to just leave the venue after I'm finished. I like to hang with the fans, and I like to sign things and talk to them. And, you know, all the other things are fun. I'm having fun. I'm not getting pulled out of there, you know, saying, just so I don't party. That's on me. You know, if anybody's going to, you know, if they were trying not to let me, I still would if I wanted to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that I wouldn't. This was the only way I was ever going to quit, is when I got sick and tired of that terrible life and where every day I wished I was dead. And that's no way to wish. And I think, well, why am I feeling that way? Yeah, well, your medication. That's what I would call it, medication.
Mm.
Everybody else called it cocaine and heroin, fucking pills and fucking this and that. I call it medicine. I used to have great faith in medicine.
Well, I don't know if you've heard of the band Bad Flower. I just talked to them over the weekend, and the lead singer openly admitted he goes on stage every single night after taking Xanax. He can't go on stage without taking it. And one, he said, so one time they were touring, and he forgot it in his bag or something. He was actually starting to tweet out to fans to see if anybody had anything. So hopefully,
well, that's a heavy duty withdrawal. Is Valium and Xanax to the nervous system? It's even worse. I've seen it in rehabs. It's even worse than heroin withdrawal, which is the most god-awful thing you could ever imagine going through.
Right.
That's why nobody has to quit. And but the Xanax and Valium, because they really start abusing them, your tolerance goes up and stuff. And before you know it, you're eating 20 a day, like Pez. Mm. And to come off of that, is you have to be strapped down, and they just scream for 2 weeks. Strapped down, going in so much pain, but they're convulsing and would, you know, be out the door, beating people up and stuff, you know, just because it's their nervous system.
Mm.
And that's like when you take a drug, you're substituting it for whatever your body produces on its own that's to that effect. And then when you stop giving it, your body doesn't produce that shit anymore. And so you're just without it. And it's like an instant agony, you know. And I little by little whittled it down. I haven't done cocaine in 10 years, and I haven't done, you know, heroin or anything for probably longer than that, 15 years or something. But, you know, they say you quit partying unless you got some. No, but that's not my style anymore. I just want to keep it cool. I don't want to go crazy and put myself in that environment every single day on a bus with the dudes and stuff. But, you know, I mean, take it seriously, and I feel better. I have a good circle of friends around me. I feel great. You know, I just do my thing. I don't have some girlfriend fucking me up anymore. I'm done with that. And yeah, everything is great. And I just write and create every day, all day and night. And I love it. That's what I'm married to.
I think I was going to say that, Debbie, like your drug of choice now is the writing and creating and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it used to be the drug. And I would write and be lucky for me that the songs would come, you know, from that and stuff. But now it's you know, life and creating and they're better. I'm smarter. I'm putting things together. I'm trimming the fat where I hear something that's I've always had it where I could have done that one little part better, but it's a great song. So listen to that, you know, and, you know, my creativity is not cock-blocked anymore because it's just me and I can do exactly what I want to do, which I always wanted to do in Enough's Enough, but insisted on the heavier guitars and no, not much keyboard and stuff like that. I have a bunch of live instruments on this. You know, there's violins, there's cellos, there's
right.
flutes, there's, you know, all kinds of shit. The guy from Jellyfish played on I Can Save the World. He did just such a wonderful job. Paul Gilbert plays on Beautiful Things. He does such an amazing job. These guys are so, so blessed. I had another guy do the background harmonies with me. So it's not just the same sound of just my voice in the background, too. It's just really, really cool. And the songs are all really strong. They just came back in a big way.
I'll tell you, it does sound killer, man. Like I said, I was listening to it last night. I got to get this thing on vinyl because that's the way I really like to listen to this stuff is just to put it on
yeah.
and be done with it and walk away.
Isn't that awesome? I got one out on vinyl now.
Okay.
You can get it. And we made it exactly like the, you know, some guys did pink records or silver or clear and this and that. They asked me, what do you want? I said, black, of course. I wanted to be like the old records. We only had one that came out like that, and they almost didn't put that out. They almost put that on just CD when that took over, you know. And so I got two now.
Yeah,
and,
I love it when they say it's limited edition black. I'm like, when I was a kid, everything was black. So
yeah, right. Including me.
Yeah.
I was even black. I was born black. Small hope, but a great wonder.
Hey, well, listen, it's been really great talking to Donnie. You know what? I have to admit, I texted Chip last night. I didn't know what kind of response I was going to get. And when he texted me this morning, I was like, really, you know, I don't know, it just made me feel good that, you know, I've never really talked to him about you before, and I know Chip, you know, a little bit, you know, and Harlan and him do their radio show, which is kind of based kind of out of WRIF in a certain way, and I think it was kind of refreshing to hear not only his take, but your take as well, so that's pretty cool.
Well, Chip has a great ability to tell you to know what you want to hear when you ask him a question. You know, he's really got ability to do that. He can really... be positive, even though he has negative feelings. He's always been good at that, and I'm trying to be more like that, you know. But he's like, he should run for governor or something. He's so good at that shit, you know. And I could never. I roll against the grain, you know. I'm not good with the man, and not good with the things telling me what to do, because they've always told me the wrong thing to do, which is why I'm in the position I'm in. And you know, I'm just a different guy than him, but together we worked out really well because we needed what I do and we needed what he did. And, but just, you know, bad times and stuff like that. And being for so long, you know, with some of the guys, most of the guys gone besides us and dead, you know? And so, it wears thin and it gets all these issues that start becoming really heavy. You spend a lot of time with somebody and you're not making any money, you know? I insisted on being paid before I walked on for shows when I came back to the band, you know, so they all hated that, but I wasn't going to do that, all of that again for nothing, you know, for $100 at the end of the tour or I owe next tour.
Right.
You know? And, so I have, you pay me before we go on, you know, it's a agreed amount. I don't care what we make. I don't care what you get. I want this, you know? And because I was treated very poorly in the past, you know, by very little in consideration, and that's because I let things get that way because I wasn't watching my own back, you know.
Yeah.
Who'd ever dream? I never dreamt that there, you know, that I was a kid from Blue Island. I wouldn't dream that there are people, you know, could feel that way, that they could do that to, you know, somebody that's the reason that you're out there and you're doing anything, that they could, you know, do something like that and still want more from you, where they would steal and, or, you know, just do a work on their own, building their own credibility for when this is over. you know, and just things like that. You know, I'm not saying Chip didn't do that.
Right.
But he's done some shady stuff since, you know. But I've cut it loose. I can't do nothing about it, and I'd rather try to step out of that, you know, the clown car, you know, for the lack of better words.
Right.
And do something serious and try to shake loose, you know, some of that, all the stigmatisms that come with enough's enough, you know.
Mm. I hear you.
I brought most of them.
Well,
I took the cool stuff with me.
Well, you got a good record out, man. Beautiful Things. It's awesome. And I suggest people go out and grab that and see what you're up to lately. And it seems like the creativity is just flowing out of you now.
I'll give you money back guarantee if you go buy the record and you don't like it.
All right.
Everyone that's heard it has really loved it. And I make them that way. Try to make them that way because there's not so much stuff that I like or it sounds like that anymore. And so I make them partly for myself, but mostly for the fans, you know.
No, you're right about that.
Now I'm positive. I was always negative and sad in the songs, and now I'm positive and you're saying, how are you guys doing? And, you know, things will be better. And did you make it through this? And, you know, it's a whole new thing again after a bunch of years off.
Yep, a new thing.
And I had to come back with something good because it was the put up or shut up. And they were laughing already when the thing started, and then we had to pull it back, and it looked like a failure.
Did you hear the latest Enough's Enough album?
I have not heard much of it. I've heard some of it. Mm. And it's exactly what I expected. I didn't understand why he would make another one without me, because that was the sound of the band. And there was no way that he was going to come close to the quality of the music that we put out before, because, you know, he didn't do the things that I did in the band that, you know, my pipes and the, you know, bulk of the writing and stuff like that. His ideas and stuff I molded and formed into cool shit. And some of those are my favorite songs, but I knew that he wouldn't be able to do that. You know, I heard a couple songs on it. He's taking cheap shots at me, but I can't hear that in there. So we fired back with this song called Troublemaker, which was definitely the biggest cheap shot you could take at somebody. And it was very, a lot of animosity. I was very bitter for a while. And that's all over now.
That's all
over. I love him. Tell him I love him. Give him my love.
You got it, man. I'll definitely do that as soon as I got the phone here with you. So, hey, Donnie, thanks so much for your time. Good luck on Beautiful Things. And if you swing by the Motor City, make sure you we hook up, okay?
Dude, thank you so much for having me, and I just appreciate every little bit of anybody that's paying any attention. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate it, and it's my pleasure.
All right, Donnie. Hey, safe travels, and nice talking to you. Thanks so much, my friend.
All right, I hope I didn't ramble.
You're fine, dude. Thank you so much.
All right, bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Donnie V on the Talking Rock with Meltdown Podcast. Pretty candid dude right there. So hoping nothing but the best for him with this new record. It's pretty cool. It does have some very Beatlesque moments. And you listen to it, it's definitely Enough's Enough. There's no question about that. And I got to thank him for taking the time out. And also Chip for floating me a text as well. Mm. And that was pretty cool to hear Donnie's reaction to that. So like yeah. We said at the beginning before we started, Rock News with Al Beck is up. And first thing we want to talk about is this new Tool record that we tried to figure out would it actually be 10,000 days since the last Tool record? We're not even close.
No, I actually we both ran some numbers and I ran some other numbers. It would have been about 27 years.
Oh, okay.
A little over 27 years to be 10,000 days. It's only been 13. So.
All right, well, their new record is supposed to be dropping on August 30th, and I guess they took to social media.
Yeah.
And there's a new logo or something?
New logo, and it's just something that they've got out there on their Twitter, and it's just the logo, and it kind of, you know, it's like a GIF. It kind of goes together, and it's got August 30th. So not much to say about it. Just it's getting closer. Putting the teaser out there. I don't think we have an album title as of yet, but man, a new Tool album is going to be here at the end of next month.
So the new logo doesn't look anything like a penis.
No.
So. That's an old one.
Right.
Yeah, last night I was somewhere. This is so bad. Where the heck was I last night? Let's see. Last night was Sunday, right?
Yeah.
I can't even remember where it was last night. And I saw that thing come over my Twitter, and I actually held it up to my ear, and somebody said, "What are you listening to?" And there was nothing. There was no sound.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wanted to hear if there was, like, you know.
You're right. There could have been.
Maybe, yeah, because it was like 40 seconds or whatever it was. I'm like, okay, is this a snippet of a new Tool record? But nothing. Yeah.
No. Oh, just a logo.
Oh, I said a hockey rink. All right, yeah, that's where I was.
Maybe getting smashed into the boards.
No, this is before I got smashed into the boards. So, I guess they played a couple new songs on some of their recent live shows, Descending and Invincible. Mm-hmm. So it just reminds me of when Disturbed put out their record a few years back, and all the titles were one word. So
we'll see
what happens with this. But, like I said, August 30th, they've got some tour dates in October, and anything else on the Tool front? Since you're the king of tools.
Since I'm the king of tools, I got nothing for you.
All right. Moving on. Let's go to Chevelle, I guess, working on an IPA or a craft beer or something.
Yeah, you know what? The latest in the long list of bands that are putting out their own themed beer. I mean, we've seen Iron Maiden, Metallica put one out recently. Now you can add Chevelle to the list. They have teamed up with the, what's the brewer's name? Revolution Brewing Company. Looks like they're going to be having a little party to launch this thing August 1st.
And that's, where's the party going to be? Like in Chicago or something?
Yeah, Chicago out there.
So you mentioned
before their Lollapalooza set.
Yeah, you mentioned Metallica and Maiden and stuff. Megadeth, Motorhead. Mm-hmm. I think AC/DC, if I'm not mistaken. All sorts of beers out there.
Slayer had a wine.
Didn't Jägermeister do something with Slayer too?
Probably. Yeah. Kerry King was big into Jägermeister.
I know. And is. Metallica, have you tried the Black and Bourbon, the whiskey?
Mm-mm, no.
Because I've got to try that because I haven't seen it, to be quite honest with you. And I want to try that Proper 12 from Conor McGregor. I haven't had that yet either. Have you had that?
No, I haven't.
I actually went in the store the other day where I saw where it was one time, and I actually went to specifically buy it, and they were sold out. So.
You know what? Every time I lay my hands on this stuff, I never actually want to drink it. I just want to keep it or something. Like, I did get a can of the Metallica beer, and I never drank it.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, it's been sitting out. It's got to be skunked by now. It's just been sitting out, you know?
In the sun, yeah.
And my cousin lived in Europe for a while, brought me some of the Slayer wine, because he knows Slayer's, you know, one of my favorite bands. Same thing. Like, I never opened it. I never tasted it.
Yeah, I can understand some of that stuff. With different things, maybe, like, the Metallica, Blackened, maybe I'd buy one to save, you know?
Sure.
And then want to drink. But I do have a bottle of Canadian Mist that I got from the Bob Probert ride, which actually says Captain Meltdown on it, because I was one of the captains.
Oh, okay.
So that was kind of like a gift, so I won't open that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, but anyways, so yeah, Chevelle putting out their own craft beer, like we said earlier. It's like, not the most groundbreaking idea.
No, but it's still kind of cool, though.
No, it is cool.
You know, because they obviously kind of sit down with the brewer and come up with the flavor, so it's kind of interesting to see what a band will say, like, this is a good beer, check it out.
Yeah,
you know?
I think Chevelle should do more stuff that's kind of more car related, since those guys are car boss, you know.
Oh, dude, that's frustrating when you go on the air and you're looking up for news or whatever to talk about them. It's always something about a car.
Oh, I know it. Yeah, that's so funny because sometimes you'll Google the band's name, right? Like for example, Drowning Pool, and there's always something about a drowning somewhere.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, it's depressing.
You got to put band in there or something.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah,
you put Chevelle in there, and it's some dude's like 69 Chevelle, or something. So,
yeah.
Hey, moving on here, we got a couple of bands. Contemplating covers.
Well, one of them, I guess contemplating is the right word for it. Fieldy, in an interview recently, was talking about how Korn has sort of on the down low been recording a bunch of different covers. I don't see any. He didn't really say, which songs they were covering, but every so often, we'll cover this song, we'll cover that song. They're just kind of stockpiling them, and it does sound like it is for an eventual covers album from Korn.
And, of course, the record would have to be, you know, with a K. Korn covers.
Korn covers, yeah.
I think Kiss did the same thing, right? Didn't they do that? Kiss did some sort of covers record back in the day or something like 20 years ago. I don't know if you know. I think it was bands covering Kiss songs.
Oh, yeah, that would make
something
sense,
like that.
Yeah.
And, of course, it had to be Korn covers, you know. But they did that killer version of, Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall. That was pretty cool. I know they've done some other ones too, and I can't think of any off the top of my head. But
is that
also,
Word Up song a cover?
Yeah, that is a cover. Yeah. And also, Alice Cooper is thinking about doing some covers too.
Yeah, evidently he's got an EP that's paying tribute to some of the biggest acts to emerge from his hometown, which is right here in Detroit.
Really? So it's all bands from here?
Yeah.
Is there any names?
So like MC5, and all a bunch of stuff like that. But let's see. It's Breadcrumbs coming out September 13th. Will not only feature covers of some of Detroit's biggest acts, but also some of the city's biggest names, including MC5's Wayne Kramer, Grand Funk Railroad vocalist Mark Farner, and a bunch of different covers on this thing. So that's, like I said, September 13th, you can expect this from Alice Cooper.
Oh yeah, Breadcrumbs. Yeah, I saw this on Twitter. Alice was just in town over the weekend, and it's like, I was contemplating going. I've seen Alice a bunch of times. I love him. I saw him one time at the John Varvatos store down here. It was about 4 years ago when they did the grand opening. And John Varvatos, for those that don't know, and I was just talking about him on the podcast with the guys from Bad Flower. Mm-hmm. And John Varvatos is like a fashion designer to the stars. You know, like Lenny Kravitz wears his stuff, and all sorts of rock stars wear stuff, and he's tight with Alice Cooper. So Alice comes into town to do the grand opening of the John Varvatos store with his full band and plays a 45-minute set inside the store,
which
only holds, I mean, it's small. It's not very big. And so the doors were at 9 o'clock, and I know the manager and stuff, so I got in there about 8:30. So I said to my wife, I said, hey, listen, do you want to stand right here, right in front of the stage, or do you want to go up in the top? You know, there's like this balcony type thing. And she says, oh, no, let's just stand here. So we stood there the whole time. And, you know, Eric Ebron from the Lions was there. Kate Upton and Justin Verlander were there.
Okay.
Michael Bolton was there.
You know, Michael Bolton?
Because he's friends with John Varvatos. So
not a name I was expecting, but all right.
Yeah, so anyway, so I watched this full set. Well, I shouldn't say full. 45-minute set from Alice Cooper. I mean, you know, 18. And you name the song, Elected, all that stuff. He played all the hits, you know, and it was really, really cool. And man, I'll never forget that night. So yeah, it's gonna be hard to top that night with Alice Cooper, but he was just in town, like I said, touring with the guys from Hailstorm. So
yeah.
Anyways, moving on, as we were talking about this earlier, Slipknot's dropping a new single.
Yeah,
we kind of were playing a little bit of this earlier, but what do you got?
Well, I mean, that's about it. I mean, obviously we're looking forward to the new album here coming pretty soon, but they've unveiled another track from the upcoming 6th studio album, We Are Not Your Kind. It's called Solway Firth, as we decided in our intro here. So,
as we decided.
So
yeah, the record has songs Insert Coin, Unsainted, which has been out there, Birth of the Cruel, Death Because of Death, Neo Forte, Critical Darling, Liar's Funeral, Red Flag, What's Next, Spider's Orphan, My Pain, Not Long for This World, and Solway Firth is the last record or the last song on the album right there. So, yeah, that's going to be coming out August 9th, you say, right?
Yeah, we'll be looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, because they're playing here in the Motor City coming up like August 12th. So I only have a few days to really bang that record out and see what it's all about. So,
yeah.
But anyways, what else on that record? Anything else?
No. That's about all I got.
Why are you even here, actually, to be quite honest?
I told you no follow-up questions.
All right, finally, let's talk about something fun here. The guys from Blink-182, there was a fan, and he exchanged something for a license plate. So what do you got?
That's right. So he had a couple of these vanity plates, you know, you can, you know, put whatever you want printed on it for a little extra money. And I guess he had Blink-182. I don't know why I can't say Blink-182. It's this thing. It's a thing. I can say it all, but if I put it together, I have trouble. But anyway, he put that on his vanity plate. He actually had one for two states, one for North Carolina, one for Virginia. And the fan went on to explain that the Virginia plate, in 2016, he had Mark Hoppus sign his Virginia plate. So he figured he would give him the North Carolina one. And Mark Hoppus said, oh, that's really cool. I collect those. I'll tell you what, I'll give you my base for it.
That's cool, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love hearing stories about that. I was telling you earlier before we came on the air that I was actually, I don't know if it was a Motley Crue signing or a Tommy Lee signing or whatever it was. And somebody came up with this kind of rare their older Motley Crue album or something. Mm-hmm. And Tommy Lee didn't have it, and he wanted it. And so he gave the guy his sunglasses right off his head, which were probably, you know,
sure,
fairly expensive, I'd imagine. He could have got him at the, you know, at Sitco down the street for all I know. Yeah. But anyways, that was kind of cool. So he's signing the stuff, and he's like, hey, dude, where'd you get this record, man? I'll trade you my sunglasses for it. And the guy's like, okay, cool. So now he's got Tommy's sunglasses. So
that's kind of cool.
No, there's been bands that have done stuff like that. I guess, I've talked about this before with James Hetfield, that Metallica, as far as they're concerned, like Lars is like, he's the guy that collects and keeps all their stuff.
Yeah.
So remember when they had like the Metallica like museum when they come through town?
Yeah, I remember.
That's all Lars's stuff. And James and the other guys, I guess, aren't that big into that stuff. Of course, Kirk, you know, collects some, you know, horror stuff.
Well, he really is. Like, we were just talking on a recent episode about how when they come through town, Lars is the one who really keeps track of, all right, these are the songs we played the last time we were in Detroit. So we want to make sure, we're going to hit Enter Sandman in one.
Yeah.
But the deep cuts, let's mix it up so you get a different experience. Every day. He's like the band historian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's got all sorts of stuff. Flyers from early shows and, you know, demo cassettes and you name the stuff, he's got it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would imagine Lars would be like the same kind of thing if somebody came up to him with something that he didn't have, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I should start asking bands if they collect stuff from their, you know, from their history.
Yeah.
How many of them do?
Right. Or maybe I wonder if there's like a thing, like a holy grail they have. Like, oh, man, I had this one guitar and I sold it and I wish I could get that guitar, you know, something kind of cool. Maybe they know that is out there that they would love to uncover, like, you know, Aerosmith, remember, recently found that first tour van on American Pickers.
That's right. And speaking of Aerosmith, I was just watching this Slash documentary over the weekend from 2014, which is like on Hulu or something like that. And there's this story, and I've heard the story before, but to watch Joe Perry tell it was kind of cool. Joe Perry was down in the ruts, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And anyways, he actually sold his like 59 Les Paul, and because he needed some money for Christmas or whatever it was. I mean, can you imagine how bad you must have been? Joe Perry has been in a rock band for 50 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And at some point in time, he had to sell his stuff because of, I don't know, drugs or bad management or whatever the case was. So he sells his guitar, and over time, it apparently somewhere along the line, Slash bought it from someone, and Joe Perry got wind that someone had told him that, hey, Slash bought this guitar, and I guess he was asking Slash all the time, hey, man, can I buy this guitar back from you, you know, and whatever. And he said, you know, after a while, he didn't want to, like, strain his friendship anymore and blah, blah, blah. And I guess it was his 50th birthday party, and Slash sent the guitar and gave it back to him.
Oh, that's cool.
No, it was really cool. So that's the story that was just on that documentary. So, in the meantime, enough of my hyperbole. I'm out. So what's your socials?
Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.